Hello, I'm Matt, and this is Ghostthropology.
Ghostthropology presents discussion of ghost stories and beliefs, and how we share ghost folklore, and, importantly, how belief in the supernatural reflects who we are. While I don't know when or where or how you are listening, I hope it's dark outside, as that is the best time for ghost stories. Episode 72, Hauntology. As regular listeners know, I like to intermittently produce episodes in which I talk about, for lack of a better way of putting it, what we have learned so far. One obvious thing that has come up in many of the stories that I have discussed, as well as in my conversations with Alina Pirock, Michelle Hanks, and even to an extent with James Tyner, is that one of the functions that ghost stories can serve is as a critique of the modern world. That is not to say that people who are telling the stories are intentionally commenting on the world as it is now, though that is sometimes the case, as discussed in the Myrtle's Plantation and the Colonial Williamsburg episodes. However, even when not being used consciously to reflect on the world, the ghost stories that typically interest people often point to contemporary matters that are of concern or to historical matters that remain unresolved. There's a concept that I've run across time and time again in the research for individual episodes and while doing more general background reading, hauntology. This term seems like it should apply directly to ghosts and ghost stories, but it actually connects through a rather roundabout route. To discuss this concept in full, I need to step back into a bit of cultural history which is now largely forgotten. While during the following discussion, it might sound like hauntology does not directly tie into ghosts, at least not at first, we will get around to ghosts again before too long, so please bear with me. The term hauntology was coined by French philosopher and cultural critic Jacques Derrida. He originally coined the term during a set of lectures prepared for an event at the University of California, Riverside, called Wither Marxism, which were collated and edited into the book Spectres of Marx in 1993. The event, and Derrida's lectures in particular, were in response to a common notion at the time, championed by many but primarily associated with the political scientist Francis Fukuyama, that said that we were at the end of history. The general idea was that with the collapse of the Soviet Union in the late 80s and early 90s and the end of the Cold War, capitalism and a representative democratic form of government had won and were the final form that human society would take. There are a few problems with this theory, of course. Starting off with the fact that while the Cold War might have technically ended, Russia and the US still have a large number of nuclear missiles pointed at each other to this day. Also, the theory is clearly pretty astoundingly hubristic and/or naive, reminiscent of a first century Roman insisting that, of course, the Roman Empire was the final and permanent form of human civilization. However dubious, the idea got a lot of press and discussion up until September 11, 2001. Derrida's lectures and books were a critique of this idea, with the underlying idea being that Marxism had not really gone away, but was still very active in the world. Hauntology reflected the idea that movements and ideas that were no longer ascendant or had no visible physical presence or force could still influence people in the present. Or at least that's what most people take Derrida's coining of the term to mean. The modern French intellectual tradition tends towards writing around ideas rather than stating one's thesis outright, and Derrida tended to take this to an extreme to the point that many readers, myself included, have often questioned whether Derrida was actually saying anything at all. Oh, and also, the term hauntology is a pun on the term ontology, the branch of philosophy that deals with the nature of being. So, in addition to being annoyed with Derrida for his writing style, I can also be annoyed with him for making bad puns. Regardless, while Derrida coined the term, he did very little to develop it, and most of the ideas surrounding hauntology today derive from the works of others, chief among them British writer, music critic, and philosopher Mark Fisher. Fisher's work is pretty extensive and worth checking out, but not something that I can go into here without going deep down a rabbit hole. For our purposes, it is sufficient to say that Fisher and many of his colleagues developed the idea of hauntology into its more or less contemporary form. In his essay, The Slow Cancelization of the Future, Fisher defines hauntology as follows, quote, "the agency of the virtual, with the specter understood not as anything supernatural, but as that which acts without physically existing," unquote. Fisher further describes two forms of hauntology. The first is focused on things that once existed in fact, but now exist only in concepts or personal or historical memory. The second is those things that have never existed, but which might come into being. Fisher was focused on modern capitalism, but the ideas can be extended well beyond that. An example of the first type of hauntology might be something such as American chattel slavery. It once existed, does no longer, but its influence on American culture and politics remains very active, both amongst those who wish to focus on it and on those who wish to downplay it. An example of the second type of hauntology could be Marxist communism, something that never quite came into being in the real world, not even in the nations that claim to have brought it into existence, such as the Soviet Union and China, but which remains a very active idea motivating real-world action among both those who wish to prevent it and those who desire to bring it about. Fisher and his fellows, in fact, often took various forms of communism and socialism, which, yes, are different, if related, things, as the truest form of this second type of hauntology, with many of them claiming that hauntology in this sense is a strictly left-wing phenomenon. However, it is difficult to see how one could realistically reject various forms of right-wing nationalistic myths that have been active throughout the 19th and 20th century, which tend to describe either a past that never was or a future that could be if you were to get rid of those who aren't part of the in-group from consideration under this form of hauntology. So that's where the term comes from and how it is often used. But now let's talk about how it relates to ghost stories. The relation of Fisher's first form of hauntology, the continued virtual presence of that which is no longer, to ghost stories is pretty straightforward. Ghosts, by their very nature, are from the past and serve as a reminder of the past. While many ghost stories don't have significance beyond the notion that something creepy or mysterious is happening, it is not unusual for tales of the ghostly to address matters of the past that still concern or worry us today. A very clear example of this is the Myrtle's Plantation, discussed in episode 68. One of my two primary sources for that episode was Holly Vaughn's doctoral dissertation titled A Critical Ethnography of the Myrtle's Plantation in St. Francisville, Louisiana, with Ruminations on Hauntology. In her dissertation, Dr. Vaughn describes how the local historical society, the local community, and the Myrtle's Plantation itself go out of their way to not discuss slavery by avoiding depictions of the enslaved population of the area in historic displays, failing to provide promotion or signs for local African American historic landmarks of the sort provided for those related to wealthy white people, and when discussions of slaves is unavoidable, using the incorrect but more palatable term servant in place of slave, which suggests a non-existent employee relationship. Dr. Vaughn even describes a tour guide at the Myrtles being clearly uncomfortable with stating that slaves worked on the plantation, instead frequently slipping and calling them servants. But, of course, slavery was such a significant factor in U.S. history, especially in the Deep South, that the very effort to downplay and not talk about it creates an obvious misshaping of history that is clear even to somebody who is not sensitive to issues of race. As a result, While the story of Chloe, a young enslaved woman said to have been killed by the plantation's owner in the early 19th century, as discussed in episode 68, may have been manufactured by the owners as a tourist draw. The fact that she has become the main attraction of the Myrtles reflects that the past cannot really be left behind. The figurative ghost of slavery will haunt us even when, and perhaps largely because, those who feel discomfort in discussing it try to hide it. And that figurative ghost often takes the form of ghost stories that describe the people, events, and institutions that we don't want to talk about openly. A similar phenomenon is identified by historian and performance artist Koya Paz. In researching her master's thesis on the incidences of lynching, she found that information was often hard to find through standard sources, such as local histories and compilations of local information. However, when she identified a ghost story that had to do with someone from a marginalized community, she often found that using that as a guide could help her find local news stories about the lynchings. Again, those who compiled the common sources, I do not say official sources as none of them are, would leave these out as such facts did not reflect well on the community and people did not wish to dwell on difficult subjects. There was a definite attempt to whitewash the local history. However, within the communities impacted by the lynchings, there remained a folkloric memory, told partly through ghost stories that pointed to actual events. These ghost stories occasionally boiled to the surface, preventing past events from being entirely forgotten and give them a potential force in the modern world. Now, while it is true that ghost stories can provide a way for past events to be made present, no matter how much people in power try to hide or downplay those events, which is the very essence of hauntology, they can also provide a way for events that never actually occurred to interfere with the present. For example, there is a famous Ohio ghost story about a building known as the Mudhouse Mansion, a story that I will likely cover soon. A common version of the story involves a slave resisting his owners and killing the slave-owning family who lived in the house. The problem is that Ohio was not a slave state, so this is, at best, an exceedingly unlikely tale. In a sense, it is hauntological in that an actual past event, slavery, is making its way into the present. But it is also being warped. Not only was Ohio not a slave state, but killings of the sort were quite rare. When, as a graduate student, I was a teaching assistant in classes on African American history, students often demanded to know why violence against slave owners was not the norm, and they did not like the complex and often frustrating real-world reasons for this. They wanted to hear about somebody striking out for justice, and the story of Mudhouse Mansion provides that, even though it describes an event that never happened. Slavery is hauntologically coming through in this story, but it is warped by modern desires both by placing it in a location where slavery would not have been and by attributing actions to a fictional slave that reflect a modern desire for punitive measures on the slaveholders rather than reflecting on the more depressing realities of American chattel slavery. Similarly, while Holly Vaughn correctly states that the story of Chloe at the Myrtles Plantation does force a focus on slavery, a focus that much of the local historic preservation work seeks to avoid, it is also a skewed view. As discussed in that earlier episode, Chloe is fictional and is, at best, a stand-in for actual enslaved people. Further, as Tia Miles points out in Tales from the Haunted South, the figure of Chloe is greatly romanticized and often used to portray a version of American slavery in which slave masters cared for and even loved their slaves, rather than the much more brutal historical reality. While this seems quite far from the Mudhouse Mansion notion of the vengeance-seeking slave, it nonetheless seems to function as a way to provide an explanation to 21st century people regarding why violent slave uprisings were not more common in American history. The romanticized version also, importantly, serves the purpose of creating a gentler American past where there is affection between slaves and slave owners. so that perhaps we don't have to worry about it so much in the present. While slavery and ghost stories involving it are obvious places to talk about hauntology in the US, there are other places where it happens as well. I spoke in episode 15 about the way that the use of Chinese labor in California during the 19th century is reflected in some of the ghost stories that I grew up with. While one could argue that some of the abusive migrant work practices of the past are echoed in the modern day when we were told these stories, no one was drawing our attention to that aspect, and most of us were unaware of a lot of modern abusive practices. Remember, they were stories told by children and teens to other young people in attempts to creep each other out, first and foremost, followed by the element of the historical injustices that had never really been properly addressed. This was not subtext. It was text. It was something that we talked about, and this preoccupation with past injustice and its weighing on the minds of children and adolescents does seem to be essentially hauntological in nature, an event of the past still pressing on our minds in the present and calling for some sort of action. I noted earlier that Mark Fisher and others have claimed that hauntology is inherently left-wing by nature, associated with social justice and a tendency towards socialist politics. But I believe that they are wrong. When we look at the Tea Party movement in the U.S. during the Obama administration, we see something that, to me, looks clearly hauntological in nature and is decidedly right-wing. Although this movement was focused on pushing forward modern conservative and reactionary politics in the here and now, the thinking and self-conception of many of its members were essentially hauntological, as they focused on the early American Republic with a preoccupation with the rugged individualism that many adherents of the movement attributed to a group of people loosely called the Founding Fathers. A particular view of these historical figures infused this movement and was often used as a way for them to express that they felt American society had lost its way. The tricorner hat and 13-star flags were more than window dressing. They expressed something hard to articulate, a notion of a lost past to which we might be able to return, connecting both the past that no longer is version of hauntology with the future that has yet to come to pass version. Indeed, as New York Times columnist Ross Douthat recently observed regarding the MAGA movement that has long since replaced the Tea Party, quote, "A slogan like Make America Great Again implicitly promises both a return to the past and a restoration of the brighter future that that past expected to achieve," unquote. This bridges both types of hauntology described by Fisher, but in a specifically right-wing arena. Now, you could point out that many of the adherents of the Tea Party movement had more passion than historical knowledge, and were more focused on what they wanted to be in the Constitution versus what was actually there, and yeah, sure, that's true. But having lived for years in places where a large portion of the population like to think of themselves as radicals or anarchists, I can say with confidence that this criticism is not solely applicable to the political right. The point is, hauntology is not solely the domain of the political left, and it is not only the left that sees a past that still asserts influence on the present, nor a possible future that never was or future that could be. And this right-wing version of hauntology also appears in ghost stories. In talking with Alina Pirok in episodes 37 and 48, and in reading her book, Spirits of Colonial Williamsburg, it became very clear that much of the ghost tourism at the Colonial Williamsburg site, and indeed much of the ideology that led to the reconstruction of Colonial Williamsburg, was based on a belief in the ghosts of the great men of America's past, and a desire to quite literally encounter their spirits, unblemished by the messy facts of actual history. While this all took place decades or even a century before the advent of the Tea Party or MAGA, the ideology expressed in these ghost stories was an animating force within both political movements. Dr. Pirok has, in fact, said that it was common for people steeped in Tea Party ideology to visit Colonial Williamsburg and likely even attend the nighttime ghost tours focused on historic white people rather than attending daytime public talks about slavery. Dr. Pirok, in writing for the Library of Virginia and in a paper published in the journal The Public Historian, discusses the phenomenon of old house biographers who, in the 19th and early 20th centuries, documented historic homes in the American South and often considered alleged hauntings as important to the house's significance because they provided a direct connection to a past that was seen as more important, more elegant, or perhaps simply peopled with a higher quality of person than the present in which they were writing. Again, the events of the past, the Revolution and the Civil War, were printing themselves onto the present and providing an animating force for conservative social and political ideologues who wished to see their heroes as perfect and not as the flawed people that they, by virtue of simply being human, really were. Again, the old home biographers predate modern political movements, but they worked within a social and political setting that sought to rehabilitate the reputation of the American South after the Civil War, and they served their role in creating a new mythology of antebellum elegance and sophistication, as well as helping to mythologize the very real ties that the South had to the American Revolution. While this work was not hauntological in nature, these people were creating the mythology of the past as much as they were motivated by it. The views of the past that they created through their work continue to fuel the socially and politically conservative hauntology of today, complete with tales of ghosts, just as both the historic facts and the romanticization of the radical communist, socialist, and anarchist politics of the 19th century motivate left-wing hauntology today. The point of all of this is that when we think of ghosts and ghost stories, we must keep in mind that even though many stories and personal accounts are just entertaining stories or people trying to express something that occurred to them, many have a decidedly political nature. Sometimes that political element is first and foremost in the teller's or listener's mind, but sometimes it will simply reflect the interests of a teller without them actually thinking of it as political. Not all ghost stories have a heavy text or subtext, but when they do, it is worth considering if the ghost may be our desires or laments about the past and hopes or worries about the future, rather than the spirit of a deceased individual. Our perceptions and feelings about the past that held great potential and the futures we were promised can be hard to articulate. Sometimes perceiving them as literal ghosts allows us a way to get at an emotional truth without being able to put our fingers upon what is happening or has failed to happen in the world. The forces of history, as well as the economic and political forces that shape our daily lives, lack a physical form to which we can point. But as writer Robert McFarlane puts it, quote, "The supernatural and the paranormal have always been means of figuring out powers that cannot otherwise find visible expression," unquote. Hauntology is a useful tool for thinking about how ghost stories and other tales of the paranormal may reflect our dreams and aspirations, our worries and fears, and how we perceive the large-scale forces that impact us and over which we have no power. It cannot be applied to every haunting, but it is useful for many.
If you have a weird tale, have had a strange experience of your own, or know of a bit of local lore that should get a wider audience, please feel free to contact me at ghostthropology@gmail.com. That's ghostthropology@gmail.com. You can find more at kmmamedia.com. Click on the Ghostthropology link, and you can find episodes, transcripts, sources, and a link to support us through Patreon.
Spooky!